This week, Maryland's Democratic legislature overrode Republican Governor Robert Ehrlich's veto of a plan to deal with medical malpractice insurance rates in the state. This action in Maryland comes at a time when President Bush is promoting his ideas about putting caps on malpractice awards. When we were looking into this subject this week, we were surprised to learn that medical malpractice insurance rates are not like driver's insurance. They're not pegged according to whether a doctor has been successfully sued or chosen to settle a claim. Joining us now from member station WBUR in Boston is Michelle Mello, assistant professor of health policy and law at the Harvard School of Public Health. Thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
And so why don't insurance companies treat malpractice insurance like auto insurance?
Well, what makes this particular line of business somewhat unique is that notwithstanding all the troubles we're hearing in the malpractice insurance market, for any given doctor, a malpractice claim is actually a rare experience. But when it does happen, it can be extremely costly. And the combination of those two factors makes it very difficult for insurers to predict which doctors are going to incur claims, when that's going to happen, and how much it will cost.
Mm. Professor, what do they base the rates on, near as you can tell?
Two factors. What specialty are they practicing in? And within specialty, what particular kinds of services are they providing?
That would mean, for example, they would be more eager to insure a dermatologist than a heart surgeon.
Right. The second factor is geography. Where in the state are they having their primary area of practice? People in urban areas are more likely to sue and more likely to recover more money than folks in rural areas, and that makes those doctors a higher risk.
Mm. Are there predictors as far as the insurance industry is concerned?
One of the strongest is the doctor's ability to communicate effectively with the patient. Informed consent problems are more likely to arise for a doctor who doesn't communicate well. But perhaps even more importantly, a doctor who doesn't communicate well is not likely to build a healthy relationship with a patient such that if a bad outcome did happen in medical care, the patient would be inclined to forgive rather than sue.
What happens when a doctor loses a suit?
Well, about 90 to 95% of malpractice claims are settled out of court. And when that happens, if the question is what happens with respect to his insurance, the answer is usually not much. But because this is such a tight market and some states have insurers that are struggling so much to maintain profitability, there are certain markets in which doctors who have even a single claim have been dropped by the insurer and forced to look for insurance elsewhere. So that's a kind of very severe form of experience rating that does go on in some markets.
Professor Mello, does it make sense to you that doctors who have never been sued for malpractice wind up paying the same rates as doctors who may have been sued half a dozen times?
From the perspective of a doctor who has never been sued and yet is experiencing these phenomenal increases in the cost of malpractice claiming, it can seem very unfair. Mm-hmm. In particular, I've heard from female doctors that this is perceived as especially unfair. This is a group that is at lower risk of being sued than men and is much more likely to be part-time practice than male doctors. So as a group, they're at lower risk, yet they're paying the same amount as a full-time male doctor, who is a much higher risk for the insurance company. But there are a few sort of countervailing arguments that I think are powerful. One is just, you know, like most forms of insurance other than auto, this is meant to be a mechanism for spreading risk. And although it is always the case that the lower risk people in a risk pool are going to end up subsidizing some of the others, generally we tolerate that because we think risk pooling has other advantages that are socially important. And one advantage is if you want a healthcare system that has all specialties represented and all risk categories within all specialties represented, then you need to make it economically feasible for doctors to practice in all of those risk categories.
Michelle Mello, an assistant professor of health policy and law at the Harvard School of Public Health. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.